Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
At Discount Tire, we know your time is valuable. Get 30% shorter average wait time when you buy and book online. Did you know Discount Tire now sells wiper blades? Check out our current deals at DiscountTire.com or stop in and talk to an associate today. Discount Tire.
Let's get you taken care of.
Podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It's the Marketer's Report. This week, Patrizia Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct to Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on the difficult task of building and retaining consumer trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy, and we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent. The best thing for us to do is to build a relationship with our consumers. And if those consumers have a relationship with the DJs that are on air, then we want to build on that. House of the Dragon, which was one of our most successful, if not the most successful campaign we've ever done for a show, audio was a core part of that.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. Not just a media company, iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Celtic State of Mind. I'm Paul John Dykes, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Laura Bradburn. We are talking Motherwell 0, Celtic 2. One goal in each half. We were sitting at half time. Laura, we were pretty chuffed with the result, but we knew that we had to put the game to bed, and that's exactly what we did. 6 minutes into the second half, and it's your man David Turnbull that scores another tremendous goal outside of the boot, left the keeper with no chance. What did you make of the second half overall?
Second half was pretty uneventful, to be honest. The goal was really well taken. It was, for all we said, you know, we didn't like the too much knocking the ball about in the first half. That was exactly how Turnbull found his opening for the second goal, and we all know what a danger he is from the edge of the box. So to see that fly in as early as it did in the second half and settle the game, I think it contributed probably to the lack of eventfulness in the second half, because I think it really killed the game off. But as I was saying to you just before we came on air, I enjoy a 6-0 win as much as anybody, but I'll take an uneventful 2-0 win 10 times over if it means we can get more wins on the board.
Yeah, we said at half time, some people thought we were being overly negative. Have a look back on the last 18 months. I'm pretty sure there's a few shows that could top that for negativity, Laura. but it wasn't the best first half. It wasn't the best second half. I'll take 2-0 every single day of the week, especially when you look at the other results. Now, Silky Skills 85 comes in to tell us, as if we didn't know. We might have kept an eye on this one. Rangers dropped 2 points. The league is wide open this year. It certainly is. And I think another good point comes in from Owen McGrandles, who reminds us, great day at the office, absolutely. Dundee United showed their performance against Celtic was no accident. They've gone Easter Road today and won 3-0. Onwards and upwards. Let's have a look at the league table then, Laura. Celtic have leapfrogged Hibernian and Motherwell. We now sit fourth in the table. A point behind Dundee United with far superior goal difference. 3 points behind Hearts, who are still unbeaten. And 4 points behind Rangers, who drew one each at Ibrox today. And, you know, were people maybe looking too much into a sticky patch or results over the last few weeks? Or is it one of the ones where you're looking at that table and thinking, you know, we should be in the top two had it not been for a couple of pretty dodgy, pretty poor performances?
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't think people were overreacting. 5 wins out of the first 9 for Celtic is never going to be acceptable. We were right to be concerned as far as that goes. But as you can see from the form table, you know, like the opening day defeat, as disappointing as it was, is almost a write-off for me at this point. Ange was nowhere near where he is now with this team. He didn't even have all of the players that he has now, regardless of injury or the fact that he brought them in. So we are a different team to the team that was playing only 9 games ago. I'm looking at this thinking, you know, this is an opportunity. The next international break isn't until November now. We've got a good month or so now to really try and put a run together. And at this stage of the season, 4 points is not a big gap to overcome as far as getting back to the top of the table, especially, and we're a Celtic podcast and I like to talk about Celtic, but I think what people forget is our season last season was exceptionally poor, but Rangers also had an exceptionally good season. Both of us will probably revert more to the mean this season and it will be closer because of that. So I don't think we're up against as strong a Rangers team this season as we were last season. Where I'm actually more concerned is that I think the overall quality of the teams in the league has increased. Dundee United are no pushovers. Hearts have shown they're no pushovers, and Hibs never are. So you've got 3 or 4 other teams there that will cause us as many problems as Rangers will, and it's about trying to make sure that we keep on top of those results to get ourselves back to where I think we should be.
You know, I was going to ask that, Laura, that very question. I don't think Rangers are going to have the same season they did last year. It was one of those anomalies, one of those one-off campaigns for them. I don't also think that Celtic are going to have, overall, a similar campaign to what we did last year, even though we've lost 3 games in the season in the league already in this campaign. However, you've got to give credit to some of these other sides who I think they are very shrewd in the transfer market. You've just got to look at Hearts, just been promoted. And, you know, people use that old cliche, they were never a championship club. Yes, they were. They were there because that's where they deserved to be at that time. But I think they've recovered very well from that. And look at Dundee United. Tam Kurt's coming in. I think a lot of people scoffed at that move to bring him in as the manager of Dundee United. But they're doing well. And I know that we've seen this in the past, Laura, with teams. They seem to fly for the first dozen games or so. We've seen it a few times with Hearts, actually. And they kind of fall away once it gets to the point where you need to have that depth of squad to see it through an entire campaign. When you're looking at this, and I know it's only 9 games in, which of the clubs that are bothering the top half of the table do you think will maintain that throughout the campaign from what you've seen?
From what I've seen, I could see certainly Hearts and Dundee United maintaining a challenge for much of the season. The other one we haven't even mentioned at this point is St Johnstone. They're just continuing to build on what they have previously. Obviously, the double cup win last season, they're springboarding off of that. They've also, you know, I've been speaking a little bit to Stevie Grieve, who I can't remember his exact job title, so forgive me, but I used to do podcasts with him, and he is now, I think he might be head of recruitment or something like that at St Johnstone now. And he talks about the structure of the club, you know, a lot on Twitter and what they're trying to achieve there. So they're not to be written off either. They've really got aspirations to take things a lot further and build on the success they've had. So they're three teams that I would certainly consider to be ones worth watching throughout the rest of the season. And that's without even mentioning Hibs, who are always strong. So to be honest, looking outside of the Celtic Rangers bubble, as we don't often do, this is probably as strong a league as we've had in a number of years, even if it's not
a decade.
Yeah, even if it's not the traditional Aberdeens and that kind of thing that you might always associate with that, but certainly there are a number of strong teams that are not going to be pushovers for us.
Well, that's interesting. We haven't even mentioned Aberdeen, you know, because during the nine in a row, it was McInnes's Aberdeen that tended to push us. And, you know, they're languishing at the minute in ninth position of the league table. I thought that was a surprise result, actually, against St Johnstone. Livingston couldn't buy a win unless they were playing Celtic at home. And they've gone out there and trounced St Johnstone today. So it's an interesting one. But as I say, I always look at the January transfer window because a lot of the time they run out of steam, Laura. And you look at a team like Hibs who done so well last season, Hearts doing so well this season and Dundee United, and you think to yourself, well, will they actually go into the transfer market and bring two or three in rather than lose two or three? Because often that's where the wheels come off any kind of challenge that they've got. So if it happens, then Celtic need to continue to step up. And today they stepped up. They got the win. It was solid enough. We got a clean sheet, Laura. And Autumn Glow comes in to remind us to talk about the defence and the fact that he believes that they deserve some praise today. I mean, as I was saying at halftime, I take notes so that I can, you know, go back to the performances of each individual player. And to be honest with you, you know, Cameron Carter-Vickers, game on game, is impressing me more and more. And a big part of that is just winning those balls in the air. I mean, the stats last season were shocking, the amount of goals we were losing from any kind of set piece. You know, Laura, we just couldn't defend it. And again, we've been guilty of it this season as well. But I think based on today's performance, he is the man in the middle that you're looking towards to win those balls. He won them time and time again. I don't think we were really under much pressure. The only real pressure moments were the ones we mentioned at halftime. And we seem to put ourselves under that pressure. And hopefully, you know, as the understanding grows between the five guys at the back, we can cut that out of our game.
I think the biggest praise I can give to the defence today is that we've talked often enough about how Joe Hart has made some saves for us that are worth mentioning, even if they're saves we would expect him to make. He's even in a couple of the games where we've lost a lot of goals, prevented us from being embarrassed in previous games. The biggest praise I can give to the rest of the defence today is that he didn't really have a save to make, and that is because the defence were winning balls in the air, they were cutting out chances, they were cutting out passes, they were cutting out runs. I would say probably, and I can't believe I'm saying this, you know, middle of October, but that was probably the most assured defensive display that I've seen from the team all season, either domestically or in Europe. Whether it would be questioned by coming up against a better team, because I have to say I was a bit disappointed in the standard of Motherwell today. Disappointed's the wrong word, as long as we win. But I expected more of a challenge from them today, and I think we will face bigger challenges. But, you know, as the old saying goes, you can only beat what's in front of you, and the defence certainly did that today for us.
At half-time, Laura, we were talking about David Turnbull. There's always this discussion when he and Tommy Rogic start that they shouldn't be starting in the same game. He came on to a game in the second half, of course, and there's two things I want to discuss. We'll lead on from Joe Porter, bringing up Turnbull. He's harsh on him because he knows that he's better than he has been shown lately, but what a goal. Absolutely, there was two main points I wanted to bring up. First of all was the goal. I mean, it was a stunning effort outside of the right boot. That's what Turnbull gives you. Often when you're struggling to cut through the defence, Laura, you want someone like that. We used to have a number of players like this. I remember we actually lost a whole clutch of players who would score from distance, all within a short period of time. And they were responsible for a high percentage of our goals. And I'm talking about guys like Dembele, Stuart Armstrong, even Paddy Roberts. They were all scoring goals from distance. We lost them all, you know, in a short space of time. That's what Turnbull can give you when you've got a packed defence, somebody who has that in his locker, and it was tremendous, and we've seen it from him before. What do you make of this inconsistency of Turnbull? Does it concern you, or is it again us maybe overlooking the fact that he is a relatively young player? He has had a horrific injury in the last couple of years as well.
I think to call him young in terms of not expecting consistency from is probably a bit, you know, we're beyond that stage with him now. He's into his 20s. He should be performing consistently. The best players in the world are performing consistently at younger ages than he's at now. So I think from an age point of view, I certainly wouldn't be necessarily giving him too much slack as far as that's concerned. I don't think the injury that he's come back from can be underestimated, though. I mean, I watched the documentary that Motherwell put out on YouTube before he signed for us. And that was, you know, many a footballer has succumbed to that injury and never played again because of it. So the fact that he's managed to come back and is playing football as regularly as he is a testament to his mental and physical ability. So I think that might contribute in some ways, but I think in general, his inconsistency is more of just a reflection of the team in general. The team's performances aren't consistent and his are reflecting of that. But like you say, his biggest asset, I think, for us is when we're having trouble knocking the ball back and forth, struggling to break down defences, struggling to get that ball across the goal on the deck for Furuhashi to put in, as we did today. Sometimes you just have to take those chances from outside the box, and he's never afraid to do that. And it's not even a case of, you know, we often slagged off Ryan Christie, for want of a better word, the last few seasons, because he would, okay, he would try those shots, but never with great accuracy or never with great aplomb. The thing about David Turnbull is he doesn't just hack at it just because he's got the space and the time. He's very deliberate about it. And I would suggest, from what I see, that his percentage of shots on target to the ones that he takes is probably quite high. Alan Morrison's a better one to ask than me about that, but I would like to see those stats, because I think he's very deliberate about when he selects to hit those shots, and he can, you know, get a lot of success out of them because of that.
It's not this shoot on sight policy that Ryan Christie spoke about last season, and that was why his percentage was so low. He was actually instructed to shoot on sight, even when it wasn't on. You're right, Turnbull is far more selective in the shots he takes. The other thing I would say on Turnbull was the tackle. Now, there was a discussion on the Axon WhatsApp group, and someone within our group who is normally very critical of the officials is our very own Lawrence Connolly, who came down to London with us to enjoy the award ceremony just over the last couple of days. And Lawrence reckons it wasn't as bad as it looked. I mean, the very fact that he has decked Turnbull, he's obviously hurt him, and I've seen the replays like everybody else. I felt that it was a high challenge, and I'm not just going to focus on that one challenge, because just a few minutes later, whilst we were still discussing it on the WhatsApp group, Ball and Goalie clearly handles the ball in the box and Motherwell don't get a penalty. So in terms of, yes, I'm going to talk about that because I want to see players protected, Laura. I don't want to see that type of tackle above the ankle because, you know, we've seen it a few times this season. First game of the season at Tynecastle, McGregor, Halliday on McGregor, it was a shocking tackle. There was also a tackle in the Ross County game that was just as bad. There was a couple in the Dundee United game, you know, James McCarthy was on the end of one of those as well. But they don't seem to be going punished. And I'm not just focusing on Celtic here. I'm not going on about a conspiracy. I think the level and the standard of the officiating today was poor. And that's why I'm bringing up the Ball and Goalie incident, because for me, that was a penalty all day long.
Yeah, I mean, I saw decisions on both sides for Motherwell and for us that I think fans of both sides have a right to be concerned about. I mean, I haven't seen it back, so people might pull me up for it. But even the Furuhashi tackle for the first goal, I'm not entirely sure how much of the ball that he got for that. I think if I was a Motherwell fan, I would be shouting for a free kick. But to go more widely on the point that you made, I think it is. For me, it's not a conspiracy. I'm not interested in, you know, talking about who supports who and who might be deliberately biased. My honest assessment is that for the most part, referees go out to to behave as honestly as they possibly can. But the standard of the decision-making is really, really poor. And I think that speaks to a problem we have in the country in general and the standard of the training that we do with the referees. You look at, for example, I mean, okay, the standard of the football on show was of a different level at Euro 2020, but even the standard of the refereeing, the referees were not a talking point at Euro 2020. They let the game flow. They made the decisions that needed to be made. There was obviously a couple of high-profile incidents that they had to deal with that they dealt with very well as well, Christian Eriksen being one of them. You know, you look at a tournament like that and you look at the standard of refereeing that you can have and you look at what we've got week in, week out. And I say this again, echoing your point about Celtic. It's not just about Celtic. There are fans of every club who have a right to be frustrated with the decisions that they are seeing being made. And I think it needs to be looked at, whether it's putting more funding in, whether it's getting coaches in from other leagues, or whether it's even looking at international referees refereeing in the domestic game. I don't know, but we need to do something to try and increase the standard of refereeing for the good of every club in the country.
Agreed. Yep, absolutely. And when tackles like that and others that we've mentioned already are going unpunished, you know, it's all about the safety of the player. Laura, you know, we just spoke about David Turnbull's injury and how hard it was for him to get back to full fitness. And yeah, that kind of tackle could put a player out for months, even longer. Before I go back to one of the points that was made earlier, Ryan Kelly comes in. I think we should be looking at progress in this team compared to last year. Cup semi-final, back-to-back away wins, along with a clean sheet. Get more ticks is what I say. Listen, we went into these three away fixtures, Laura, and we were talking about Pittodrie, Fir Park, Easter Road. The discussion around the three games was, you know, how many wins can we get out of those three games? And I don't think anybody who was talking about them were actually saying three. Well, That's two out of two. We went to Pittodrie and we ground out a victory and we deserved that victory. Today we went to Fir Park. I think it was a wee bit more comfortable for Celtic. You just got to look at the possession as well. I know that doesn't always give you the goals. But we won the game comfortably, I feel, today. And we move into the third of that trio fixtures that we were talking about against Hibs at Easter Road. I'm not going to say overconfident, but I think we're in a good place to go into that game. We don't have a great record at Easter Road. But again, Hibs have shown today that, you know, they're there for the taking. Dundee United went and turned them over 3-0. What do you fancy, having looked at the last two away games, when we go to play Hibs?
I mean, I think you can't do anything other than be a bit more confident than we were, because you have seen performances there that you're encouraged by. And I think you can be too negative sometimes in saying that, okay, the Aberdeen team that we faced at Pittodrie, the Motherwell team that we've faced today, haven't been up to much. But like you said, we can't forget that going into those games, we really wondered if we were going to get any kind of a result. And the fact that we've come away with results, regardless of the standard of the teams we are playing, is a real positive and something really to build on. We've talked previously about, you know,
as the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
The form that we're in making is perhaps wary of going to places that we wouldn't usually have been wary of going to, because everybody knows Easter Road's always a difficult place to go. But we've got to take confidence from this. Two away wins from two, when it was as much of a problem as it was, is a sign of progress, as the commenter said, and we've just got to keep building on it. Momentum's the most important thing in the game, and if we can keep that momentum going, then it'll only stand us in good stead for going into the Christmas period.
Yeah, without a doubt. Now, there's a few interesting comments coming in relation to the strength of this league this season, Laura. Now, Philip comes in, Philip DeMarco. We see that tremendous avatar coming up from time to time on the bulletin. Thanks for getting involved.
Is that David Turnbull in that? Is that?
It could well be. He would suit that away jersey, let's be fair. The competitiveness of the league, being good or poor, will push us on. 100%. I've always said that, you know, when you go back to when Celtic won 9 in a row first time round, the quality of some of those sides, Laura, I mean, they were performing in Europe during that period and before, and were performing to a high, high standard. So yeah, absolutely get that. If you're playing in a strong league, it's going to push on Celtic. So I welcome it. I absolutely do welcome it. Ian comes in, Ian Lowry. I'm not sure whether the league has got better in quality or that Celtic and Rangers squads haven't got the same strength and depth. Is the only way to judge this, Laura, when you look at the performances of the clubs in Europe? Is that the only barometer of whether or not our league is strong?
I think it has to be. We talked about it yesterday on the bulletin. Jim has been a big proponent of it, that progress at Celtic and Rangers is progress in Europe and nothing else, because if we progress in Europe, the domestic game will take care of itself. And to that extent, I guess I take the commenter's point on board. Hibs, St Johnstone, Aberdeen, all these teams who've had a go in Europe haven't come up as well as you would have expected them to. Having said that, they've had some notable results. One that springs to mind is St Johnstone against Galatasaray. Okay, they went out eventually, but they definitely gave them a game, which the resources of the two clubs compared is beyond comprehension. But Europe is going to be the way in which we see where this league is at in a couple of years' time. But I am, you know, confident that the standard of all the teams is rising. We're getting good young managers in, like Thomas Courts at Ross County. Postecoglou is bringing something different to the game as well. So I think there's a positivity about the Scottish game that can't be ignored. And we're often, I think as a fan base, Celtic and Rangers fans are accused of being a bit arrogant when it comes to the rest of Scottish football. I think we've got to take stock of the fact that there are some good teams and certainly some good individual players in those teams that are worth being aware of and being wary of, because I personally think that, okay, we've had great success over the last 3 years, but that has been in a wider picture of quite a poor league. And I think not only is our lack of success last season a sign of our regression, but I think it's a sign of progress on the part of the other teams.
Red Scotland tends to disagree. He reckons that our league's a very poor level of journeyman, and we've been making them look good this last 2 years. Now, the thing with that is, it's sometimes difficult when you look at a game like the Leverkusen game. Very good side, we know that. They're second in the league and a very strong league, but they come over and make Celtic look pretty ordinary. Yes, I know we had our chances, but at 4-0, I did feel that, you know, had we came back into that game at any point, we were unlucky with the penalty. It was never a penalty. Individual errors. We've analysed the game to the nth degree, but I do think there was another gear which they could have clicked into at any point that night. It's hard to disagree when you go into the European game and you get trounced. You know, we've played two games in Europe. We've lost 4 goals in both of them. I know the Betis game was a different game entirely. But we are in a time of transition as a football club, not just behind the scenes, but on the park, Laura. So I think we've got to take that into account. Once we get a fully fit squad, which is something Ange Postecoglou has never had the luxury of thus far, I think we can then have a look at this and say, just how good are we? And by that time, of course, the European endeavours might have already been decided, and we could be possibly looking for the third-tier tournament. But again, even that, I think it's a good introduction, because you're giving teams like Hibs and St Johnstone, and I know they didn't progress the way we wanted as a nation for the clubs to progress, it's giving them an opportunity to make millions of pounds that they wouldn't otherwise have made. I mean, I think had they qualified beyond the group stages beyond the stages that they were knocked out at, it was something to the tune of £2.5 million that would have been in their coffers, Laura. So I think that's a massive development that's going to help domestic games like Scotland, for example, where money is too tight to mention, as it was once said. Now, there's also Stephen O'Rourke coming in with a great point. We're talking about depth of squad and the fact that Ange has never had that full complement of staff at his disposal. One of the players, of course, is Jamesy Forrest. The last couple of years have been really difficult, both for the player and for the fan base. He played his fewest games ever in a season last season, Laura. And all of a sudden, it looks as though it's going to be a troublesome year for him this term as well. And then it begs a question in relation to that right side of the midfield, Abada. And the fact he wasn't at his absolute best today either, was he?
No, he certainly wasn't. He talked about it after the halftime analysis from the first half. Not necessarily that he was as anonymous as he has been. He certainly saw more of the ball than he has in other games. He certainly was taking players on and beating them. But his delivery and his final product was really poor today. And, you know, you would hope that James Forrest coming back and being in contention for a place will improve the standard of both those players. You know, we've talked about how an improved standard of clubs in the league can only help each team improve, but that's the same with a squad of players. If you've got good competition for places, it only makes every player concerned better. And to have both Abada and Forrest as options going forward is the kind of strength and depth that I would want us to have.
You know, there is also the point there on Cameron Carter-Vickers. I did think he was solid, but Will McMillan also comes in to say Starfelt was solid enough today as well. And I think that, yeah, there were some concerns raised about him up at Pittodrie, maybe being muscled out a wee bit in some of the one-to-ones, but I think he was solid today. When we're looking at the loanees that we have at the moment, Laura, you know, some of the loanees over the last few seasons haven't set the heather alight, as it were. But we've got two in Cameron Carter-Vickers and Yota that at this moment in time, in its early days, do look like must-buys, as Stevie Boy says.
Yeah, I mean, Cameron Carter-Vickers, like we've said before, is about as solid as a defender as I've seen for a number of years for us. Starfelt deserves his credit. He was as solid himself today. So I would like us to see if we can get Cameron Carter-Vickers in on a permanent basis. The idea that, you know, you can change the way that you plan ahead if you've got him on a permanent basis would be something exciting for us. But to be honest, my absolute must-buy is Yota. If figures are to be believed and Benfica are looking for $6.5 million for him, I would say snap their hand off for it, because he's just everything that I want in a Celtic player. He's exciting. He actually has an end product. He takes players on. He's got a positive attacking attitude when he plays the ball. And even things like that, sort of, it wasn't really an overhead kick. It was like a scissor volley that he tried in the first half. Okay, it didn't come off. But the idea that we've got a player in there that's got the confidence to try things like that, he's the type of player you want playing at Celtic. That kind of player that gets you out your seat and actually has the end product as well. I would be snapping their hands off for him and telling them that, you know, he's a vital part of our future, because it's clear from the way that he celebrates and the way that he's up for the games that he's loving life at the moment and loving playing his football. So I think he should be rewarded for that.
Absolutely. I mean, if that scissor kick comes off, Laura, you know, it would have just raised the roof. And by the way, I wouldn't write that off this season, him scoring a spectacular effort just like that one. Now, if you will indulge me for a moment, we are into the last minute of the post-match. And thankfully, Soft Scots comes in to say that Celtic were inspired by the Axon treble. I haven't really gone on about it. It's brilliant to be back in the hot seat, Laura. You've done a great job yesterday on the Bulletin, as I've said. But we were down in London for a couple of days. We were nominated for 3 awards. And we did win 3 awards. We won 2 golds and a bronze. The bronze was for the charitable weekender that we did last December. There will be another one early December this year, so look at our socials for updates on that. We are going to be going out 24 hours over our weekend as well. We won the Best International Podcast. We're up against some really big hitters, such as Open Goal, who have just sold out the Hydro. 14,000 people went to the Hydro to see them performing. And Best Club Content Creator International. So we were up against AC Milan, Barcelona, etc. And we came home with that one as well, Laura. But what I want to say is it's an absolute privilege to go out to the people that tune in on a day-to-day basis, Laura. I mean, today we've been going out to like 1,300 live viewers. And I know a lot of people come in later on and watch it on YouTube or Twitter or Facebook, wherever you fancy. It's also going out on the audio platforms later on tonight. We don't take that for granted. We are privileged to have the platform that a lot of people tune in to. We feel absolutely knocked over by the fact that it was your votes that got us to the awards ceremony in the first place. When we accepted them, we're accepting them on behalf of the Celtic fan base who tune in, Laura. It's as simple as that. And we will display them with pride in the studio, and we will go on about them from time to time because we're very proud of them. But it's down to the audience, it's down to the contributors, and we have created a community. So we should be really proud of that as well, Laura.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about all the hard work that you and Kelvin have put in the background, all the contributions that have been made by myself and everybody else who's on the bulletins week in and week out. But the main reason that we do it is for the people that watch the show. You know, I've no doubt that we would sit and talk Celtic if nobody was watching, but it would be rather pointless without all the comments we get, all the names that we see coming up again and again. I could list, you know, 100 of them that you see coming in every single week and every single day. And the idea that, you know, that your work and the work that's been done by everybody as the channel has grown to create this community of people who would back us to that extent and let us win awards over, like you say, podcasts that have or should have a much better chance of winning those awards than us, just shows exactly what kind of a viewership that we've got. A group of viewers who hopefully enjoy what we do, hopefully are invested in what we do and have shown that they are. So again, I would just like to echo the thanks to everybody who's watching for taking the time out to vote for us, because believe me when I say this, you'll have seen very many public messages from us on Twitter across the weekend, but what's being said in private reflects that as well. We are bowled over by what we've seen from people and we truly, truly appreciate it.
You know what? We were up against people like Sky Sports and BBC down there, Laura. It's not an alternative award ceremony. It's a media award ceremony. And as you say, people behind the scenes, Kelvin, who's our videographer, we're working on Axiom shows that are not live broadcasts. We want this to be a gateway to some of the other content that we're producing. The Axiom Retrospective, where we interview ex-Celtic players and other figures, people who write books on Celtic. Kevin Graham's Screamer Celica, the first episode of the new recorded version is on its way, and there's other Axiom shows and events and everything else on its way. It wouldn't be possible without John, who basically set up the studio and set up a state of mind to allow Axiom to flourish, and flourish obviously we have over the last year. I'm going to leave you with a wee story. This is what happened on the way down to the awards ceremony, right? Now, it's a big ask to get people down there, Laura. It's very expensive. There's time off work. There's responsibilities at home. So although we have 18 contributors in total, not everybody could go down. We would have loved it if we had a table down there, but it was myself, Tony Haggerty, Lawrence Connolly, and my good lady, my long-suffering wife, came down as well. So we go and jump on the train, and we're from Fife, so we're on our way down to London, and we change over to Edinburgh, as we'd be expected. We've got everything ready. We've been planning it for weeks, Laura. And at that point, the missus goes into her bag and produces the envelope, which should have the train tickets in it all the way down to London, which were purchased weeks ago. And again, not going on about the money side of things, but these things are expensive. And if you were to buy them again on the day, they'd be probably twice or three times the price. And she pulls out what she thought were the tickets. And it wasn't tickets to London. It was three tickets to see Jason Donovan at the Usher Hall in November. Now, I'm not a Jason Donovan fan. I'm a Donovan fan, the Scottish kind of folk singer from the 1960s whose daughter married Sean Ryder from the Happy Mondays. So I'm not quite sure what the tickets were for, but I thought it was a wind-up. Very quickly, I realised it wasn't a wind-up. We didn't have the tickets. So we get to Edinburgh, and the good lady goes up to the desk to try and explain the predicament, and all I'm seeing is no can do. There's nothing you can do about it, et cetera, et cetera. We've decided to print out the tickets, do it the old-fashioned way, Laura. We don't have a barcode on our phone. We're basically going back to Fife. Now, I've got my mask on, obviously, for the precautions, et cetera. But at that moment, I tried to produce the e-ticket, or what I thought was an e-ticket, and I pulled out my phone, which is here, and on the back of it is Axiom. At that moment in time, the guy behind the desk, whose name is Sid, says, I watch Axiom. I'm a big fan. We're going to make sure that you get down to London. I know that you're going down to your award ceremony because you'd been listening to us the day before. I couldn't make this up. Between Sid and a girl called Louise, they make sure that we get a wee ticket, which basically allows us all the way down to London and back. On the strength of that, Laura, we were at the awards ceremony. So a big shout out to Sid. I've got his details. We're going to be sending him an Axrom swag bag to thank him for getting us down to London. Because at that moment in time, we weren't going to be there. Lawrence travelled separately. He was going to have to go up to the stage and give an acceptance speech. All he did on the night was grab the mic and shout hail, hail to the entire audience, which was tremendous. But big shout out to Sid and Louise at LNER, who made sure that we got down there, Laura. I'll tell you what, everything was conspiring against us until those two stepped in and sorted it out.
Listen, I've never met your good lady wife, and I already love her to bits because she's outed you as a Jason Donovan fan. I sit and take a slagging. People watching this will never know. I'm Backstreet Boys, Westlife, all that to the hilt. I had a big brother who listened to Oasis and The Verve and all that, that all you guys are all on about being the coolest bands in the world, and I appreciate it. But when I saw those Jason Donovan tickets, I was over the moon. If we had never even won an award this weekend, was entirely worth it. So, but yeah, thank you to Sid and Louise, I think you said, from LNER for getting you guys down there. It's much appreciated, and it was well worth it as well, because we ended up picking up the awards that we did.
It was. And it was great to meet loads of other content creators who were well aware of what we're doing here. They were coming up. They were asking what it is we do, what we've changed from last year. And there is a real community feel about content creation and about Axrom. Some people call it the Axrom cult. Laura, I wear that as a badge of honour. I thank every single one of you for tuning in. We'll be back. We'll be back on Monday. There's a few shows over the weekend. Get yourself on the YouTube. Subscribe. We're still giving away prizes. Bobby Lennox signed framed print is up for grabs this month, as is an Etif watch, which we'll be giving away. They sponsor the match day on Axrom, and you can get 15% just by clicking on the link below the video. Thank you, everybody. We've won 2-0. It's another away win. We move on and hopefully up the table, Laura.
It's the Marketer's Report. This week, Patrizia Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct to Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on the difficult task of building and retaining consumer trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy, and we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent. The best thing for us to do is to build a relationship with our consumers. And if those consumers have a relationship with the DJs that are on air, then we want to build on that. House of the Dragon, which was one of our most successful, if not the most successful campaign we've ever done for a show, audio was a core part of that.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. Not just a media company, iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Sports Social Podcast Network. 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 Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.